Welcome back to Eco Talk. And in this segment, we're going to be talking about something that I watched just today, and I'm still chilled by it. And I see a lot of chilling things as an environmental radio host. It's called The End of Suburbia. I highly recommend it. You know, they have something called required reading. This is required viewing. And we're going to speak with someone who was part of that project, and he is Julian Darling. He is the director and founder of the Post Carbon Institute, which produced this fine piece of work. He's also the author of High Noon for Natural Gas. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Tell us a little bit about the background of putting this together. This is something the Post Carbon Institute envisioned and had made, and was that a long process?
Well, I need to make a slight correction there, if you don't mind, is that we aren't the producers of it. An interview I did with Jim Kunstler some years ago now, which is available on Global Public Media, inspired Barry Silverthorne, who's the producer of End of Suburbia, and he then worked with Greg Green, the director of it. So I did, I believe, inspire the film. I wish I had made it. It's a wonderful film.
Okay. So thanks for clearing that up. But you were in it, featured quite prominently.
And I was a small part of helping to make it beyond just being a sort of inspiration. But yes, I'm in it, and along with many other people who are major voices in the oil and gas peak story.
And the Post Carbon Institute is really trying to use this as an educational outreach tool.
We do indeed. Yes, it's been, over the last couple of years, been one of our best awareness-raising tools that we've had.
Give us a summary of what it explores, so you know, better to hear it from you than me. I just watched it. You had a lot to do with the making of it.
Essentially, it looks at a living arrangement called suburbia, and examines how much energy and effort that all takes, and concludes that without oil and gas in vast quantities, and cheap quantities too, the thing doesn't have much of a future. That's what it boils down to.
One of the lines I quoted, wrote down a couple of quotes, is the suburban lifestyle is dysfunctional and will become more evident as the global oil crisis deepens, as she's trying to say. And that's a pretty good way to describe it, dysfunctional. It's something that looked good, seemed like the way to go towards the American dream, and it's kind of turning into a nightmare, or will, as we reach peak oil, as climate change rears its ugly head, and a lot of other factors. And you talk about how natural gas is not going to save us.
No, that's right. It's a very unfortunate way to have laid things out, and unfortunately so much of North America is laid out basically as suburbia or also as dysfunctional cities. It's depressing, but I'm afraid it's hard to avoid the fact that virtually the whole of the way North America has been laid out is not going to work very well without very large amounts of energy, which includes natural gas, the natural gas being used for electricity in particular, but also for a very large amount of home heating and for industrial process heating.
How far away do you think we are from seeing the suburbs turn into slums, as was mentioned in the piece?
Well, that's very, very hard to say at the moment, because there are so many other factors which need to be taken into account, including financial factors. And people in the financial world who do or don't believe in oil and gas peak, still many of those are very worried about the fragility of the financial situation. If that suddenly were to crack apart, then many other things may be sped up in terms of the speed at which they come apart. It's very hard to say. Will it be a collapse? Will it be a slow leaking? Some bits will probably fare much better than others, and that doesn't just apply to suburbia. We're going to make immense efforts to stop this thing from coming apart, and some of those efforts will be more successful in some places than others. How this thing can keep going in its present form for another few decades is certainly very mysterious, but no doubt we'll try.
There was a lot of great commentary in there. Richard Heinberg, who, of course, writes about the end of oil, he said, you know, normal is, in America, consuming like there's no tomorrow, and we're somehow maintaining this facade, and we're almost like going towards a cliff that if you're not looking, you may not see, but it could be a rather rude awakening if we don't begin to make this eco-U-turn.
Yes, I think there's been a rude awakening in Europe in the last 3 days. For instance, when Russia, which supplies at least a quarter of European natural gas, decided to reduce the pressure because Ukraine wasn't prepared to pay the market price, and then suddenly Europe received a big shock in the last few days. And then I think there are many conversations now going on in the corridors of power in Europe, saying, "Oh dear, where else are we going to get our gas from?" And wherever you look for natural gas and for oil, it becomes the same story. industry. The number of large supplies for it are diminishing, and many of those large suppliers themselves are peaking and going into decline too, and the list grows longer with each year. So there has to be an awakening in this. The question is, how will it happen? Well, some of it will be political, as we've just seen. Then what will the reactions be? If you believe in that the market will solve everything and human ingenuity and a techno fix, you'll just say, oh, well, it's all cyclical. There'll be more investment, more ingenuity, more innovation, and we'll fix it. I think if you actually take a seriously scientific approach to this and add up the various aggregate sources and sinks, you know, what we take and what we've got or what we can grab anyway, you start to come to the conclusion that there is by no means enough to keep this project going for all that much longer, whether we mean months or decades, and one needs to start looking at a completely different way of operating. But needless to say, that's not what we want to do.
Do you agree with Richard Heinberg's observation, another one, about the media, how it's pretty much been missing in action, and he supposes that's because there's no upside, you know, in doing this as a story? It's not going to be good for stock prices. It's not going to be good for growth and consumption, since we are such good over-consumers. If we actually identify that as part of the problem, well, gee, what would that do to the great American dream and capitalism and, you know, our tendency to buy, like there is no tomorrow? He called it bewildering, mystifying, staggering, how the mainstream media has been missing in action on these huge stories that will affect every one of us.
Yeah, one could imagine that 30 or 40 years ago, the situation may have been different. And one of the reasons is the mainstream media itself is part of the giant free market capitalist machine. And they understand this, and the journalists who get... One of the easiest ways, you don't have to indoctrinate anybody or put them into thumb screws to make them write what you want them to write. You just hire people who already think like that. And that, I'm afraid, is to a large extent what mainstream media has done. And if you want to be a well-paid journalist, then you go into it thinking like that. And then it's not very painful for you.
That must be, since I talk about these issues week in and week out, that must be why I'm not a well-paid journalist.
Well, you know, basically, if you disagree with these more or less the status quo, business as usual, you're extremely unlikely to get hired. Whatever they say, you might get the odd op-ed column, and even that's a bit doubtful. You've got to basically agree with the machine. We do it in the West in much more subtle ways than the Soviet Union did, but in some ways it boils down, at least in this sense, that you can't make a living if you don't more or less agree with the system. There are one or two exceptions, but one or two exceptions have always been excellent for the advertising and PR system. Think of, you know, famous black sports people. Does that, just because there are one or two black sports people who make a lot of money doing what they do, does that mean that a lot of people of color is great? No, not at all. And the same thing goes for poor people. One or two poor people make it out of the difficult situation they're in, and so that's supposed to make the system all right.
Okay, we're going in a bit of a different direction, and we could go in so many different ones, but I want to, in the last 3 minutes, talk about, you know, solutions. What can we do? And it seems like one of the silver linings of what's coming, if it is inevitable, is that peak oil could actually reverse globalization, and there could be a movement towards relocalization. Is that the kind of work that the Post-Carbon Institute is trying to get people involved in?
Yes, exactly. Our new book, Relocalize Now, is very much focused on relocalization. That's to say, getting your daily needs from within a local ambitus and as close as possible. That's the only thing that makes sense. It's what all the other animals do, and we think we're very clever for not having done that, but we'll soon find out that it's not very clever.
As James Howard Kunstler said, he had many great quotes in this piece, The End of Suburbia. We must downscale everything. The age of the 3,000-mile Caesar salad is coming to an end. And he says this is not just going to be about driving to the mall, not having enough fuel for that, but having enough food to feed our children.
Yes, most of our food comes from far away, and all that food, or virtually all of that food, is made with oil and gas directly, and then it's transported mainly with oil. And that you just cannot go on doing that forever, and that point is brought home when there isn't enough, either there isn't enough, so outright shortages are going to be a problem in terms of oil and gas, I suspect, possibly for political reasons, but also the price will go up. It'll go up in very erratic ways. It'll be hard to plan, and it'll get ever harder to fuel the truck transport system of North America and other places that do the same thing.
So let's get back to this documentary. I know there's been some house parties around it in the Bay Area where you invite your friends over and watch this and sober up as you maybe sip on your white wine.
Yes, Post-Carbon Institute and David Room and others who are working with him down in Oakland and in the Bay Area. Post Carbon Institute has been very much a part of organizing people to show this in a, if you like, a semi-public fashion, and to suggest questions and what to do afterwards, because no film can do more than a few things, and this one is excellent at changing one's awareness about the situation of hydrocarbon supply.
I would agree wholeheartedly. I would concur with that.
And so then the problem is, well, if you agree that this is a problem, then what are you going to do about it? And that is something that is very, very much more complicated, and as many encyclopedias will have to be filled to think about this. But we've got so little time that whilst we must write, talk, and think about this, we must also be doing at the same time. So much of what we'll have to do has to be done in parallel, and that's going to be tricky. In other words, we have to do research, development, and deployment all at the same time.
Julian, I'm afraid we're running out of time. I do not want to let you go without giving us a couple of websites people can go to.
Post Carbon Institute's website is postcarbon.org, and globalpublicmedia.com is the website of Global Public Media. And my book, High Noon for Natural Gas, talks about not just the natural gas situation, but also about oil. And the last chapter, which is the longest, also starts talking about the community-level response that people will have to start thinking about.
Thank you. Julian Darley, director and founder of the Post Carbon Institute, thanks for joining us. To find out more about today's topics and guests, go to our website at www.ecotalk.net.